everyone. Welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet. And why? With a summer full of major sporting events around the globe, this week we're discussing the digital experiences that weave through so many elements of sporting events. We'll discuss the powerful role that NetOps teams play in these events and best practices for giving fans amazing experiences. I'm Barry Collins, and I'm joined today by the amazing Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst at Cisco Thousand Eyes, as well as special guest Dave Anderson, a tech industry veteran and co-host of a very Melbourne podcast, which covers the Australian Football League and more. As always, we've included chapters in the episode description below, so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't already, we'd love you to take a moment to give us a follow over at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. Let's get on with the show. Dave, welcome to the show. In addition to your day job, you also have a podcast all about the Australian Football League. Tell us more about your love of sports and what sparked your interest in that world.
I've always loved sport since I was a kid. I grew up playing team sports and I love watching nearly every sport that there is, including Australian rules football. I played field hockey as a kid. I love the Boston Celtics and I'm heading back to Boston now that they've won an NBA title. So I'm a big fan of lots of sports.
Mike, what about you? Any favourite sports?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same sort of, you know, growing up, a lot of sports out there. Really couldn't do many of them, so just kind of gravitated to track and field. But I'm a big soccer fan, follow Arsenal, and have the misfortune to follow Fremantle Dockers here in Australia.
So now let's think about all the technology that ensures major sporting events go well and that the fans tuning in from around the world have a great experience. What's going on behind the scenes to ensure everything runs smoothly?
So first of all, you've got to consider that there's a lot of things that are involved in this broadcast that's going on. So there's dynamic environment for the sport that's happening at that moment in time. So you've just got to film that. You've got the people in the stadium themselves. And then you've actually got to broadcast it out to all the various people. So there's a couple of things here. So we're dealing with this concept of taking an analog event and we're turning it into digital. And then we're transporting it across this internet, multiple disparate systems, all with interdependencies linked across them. Then we get to the other end. We've got to turn it back into an analog signal so that people can watch it and consume it on their devices. So if you think about that, all those different things come together. We can have all these dynamic environments. You can get this situation where something goes wrong. So for example, there was a couple of pay-per-view events. So we had the UFC issue, and then we also had one at DAZN. In both these cases, the actual event was happening. It actually went on and people had logged on. They'd actually come to this one event there and they could see the event, but they had no audio. So again, this is another dependency we have to think about. So you'd actually assume then, would that spoil the entertainment value? You couldn't have the commentary going on. You couldn't understand the calls. So it kind of devalued it. They'd paid for an overall experience. But then when that does occur, now this problem is, where is this issue happening within this service delivery chain that makes it up? First thing I'll go is, have I got the TV on mute? So then we'll sort of try then turn up. Or am I going deaf? I'm very old. And it then depends on sort of what the sound is. You know, is it intermittent? Is it just coming in and out? Or is it gone completely? If it's gone completely, is it just for me? Is it for everybody else? You know, is it just in my area? So it's all these things you need to take in. And how do we go about testing that? How do we verify where that situation's occurring?
Yeah, from my perspective, I think the consumer just doesn't care if it's broken, why it's broken. They just want it to work, right? The expectation of every customer when they're watching any sporting event or going and using a digital service is that it works. And as Mike just pointed out, it's actually a pretty complicated delivery chain. One little break in the armor along the way can cause either a small outage or a massive outage. And when it comes to sport or entertainment for that matter, our acceptance for failure is zero. And you see people turn to social media to complain about the service. Yeah, my point to all of it is, if you're going to deliver a digital service, you have to make sure it works. And if there are problems, you have to communicate pretty quickly what those are and you have to get them resolved, because user acceptance is zero for downtime.
Yeah. And you have that, this is a real-time event. This is going on now. So you can't go back and we'll fix it in a minute. So everything's there. And like I say, it's determining what it is. Yeah, we paid for this experience. I expect to have it. I mean, even when I visit the game now, right? Even if I go to the cricket, I'll have the commentary in my ear. And if that breaks down, it's like, oh, what's going on? But there's something else in that in-game experience as well.
Yeah, and I have the same issue, right? Like, so in Australia, I watch the Australian Rules Football, and they've recently progressed in Australia. We now can watch things in 4K, which is amazing, up from, you know, HD signals. And it wasn't that long ago we couldn't even get HD. But what I notice is lag in some of the apps. I notice the apps crash a lot. Some of them are native to the TV. So sometimes I'm trying to work around that by streaming from my phone to the TV because I don't use free-to-air TV. It's all app-based. So I'm often trying to find the best workaround, and it's not my internet speed that's the issue, because I know my internet speed's really, really fast. So there's got to be something that's causing the issue, and it's immensely frustrating when you're trying to figure it out.
And how do you go about troubleshooting that? I mean, because you're obviously tech savvy, so what do you actually do to look to that situation?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I actually recall me getting so frustrated one Saturday afternoon where I just wanted to sit down and relax, and the football was on and my team was playing. And I just couldn't get that. It just, the app would buffer or it would just stop. And then I go, okay, firstly, I'm going to go open the app up on my phone and see if that starts streaming. And I'm like, okay, streaming on my phone. So then I'm troubleshooted it down to maybe this is the device issue that's causing the problem. So I'm like, okay, so what's the connection of this device? And I start working my way through scenarios to isolate where I think the problem might be. And also I would look, is everyone else impacted by this? Is it 5G? Is it my Wi-Fi? And then I'm a bit more technical than the average person. So I did realize at some point along the way that my TV had actually connected to a different access point within the house. So I have a unified network that I was pulling up, and I would look in the analytics of that particular networking software, and I would identify that it was a poor signal to that TV. And so I reconnected it, kicked it off the network and said, go connect to the local one, and got the service back up and running again. But your average person, they're never going to do that. They're just going to get frustrated. They'll probably turn the TV off, turn it back on again and try again.
And that's a challenge for the broadcasters, right? Because you're potentially dealing with 4K streams that are going to push the capabilities of many people's in-home technology and connection speeds. And they've got all manner of different devices to support. That must be a huge job for the broadcasters.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, they're the ones that are going to cop the blame. If I'm starting to have bad Wi-Fi in the environment, that's where I'm going to get lag in there. You know, as Dave's talking about, this connects to the wrong access point. But then also, what if my TV's overloaded? What if my Xbox is overloaded? What if, you know, my device is there, is overloaded? That has to process that file. And if it's doing something else, it's got some resource-sucking alien application running on it, and then that's taken all the other resources running in the background, then I'm going to start to get this jitter. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to complain about the broadcaster. I'm going to complain about my network. So all these things build up.
There's a good example, actually, Mike. Is, I noticed you mentioned that you're a middle distance runner. And one of the fitness things that I do a lot is Peloton. And that's a brand that delivers video and audio in real time with live classes to a big audience. And I know during COVID, they were streaming to like not the same scale as what an NBC or these big broadcasters are doing for a Super Bowl. But for a brand that was originally only getting 2,000-3,000 people to a class, all of a sudden they're getting 120,000 to a class. So their systems have to scale. And it's funny, the original question was like, you know, what do these brands do? I actually see a lot of feedback on social media about Peloton and the fact that they're having lag issues, the audio isn't in sync, the metrics are slightly out, I can't connect. And there's a lot of self-help network engineers in the group that are helping them understand that it's like, it's probably not Peloton, it's probably not their app. If it's not happening to everyone, it's probably your connection. So it's a really interesting example, and it's actually a great one because there's nothing more frustrating than riding for or running for 25 minutes and you may be at the top of the leaderboard and you're running one of your best classes and all of a sudden it just stops on you and you're running and they're calling cues. They're telling you, slow down, speed up, go to this incline, do this, and all of a sudden it doesn't anymore.
So as we mentioned earlier, it's not only the broadcasting experience that must be spot on, but also the experience for people actually attending the events. Which factors come into play at venues themselves?
We're talking about digital tickets. People have them on their phone so they can get in there. Then if there's an issue with that, if it's an issue with the barcode doesn't print, there's a problem with the reader, there's an issue where you actually forgot to download it to your system so you don't have it in your wallet at that moment in time, you have to download it. Where do you get there? And remember, when we're talking about getting to these facilities, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people potentially. Now, a lot of this is sort of taken care of when we actually go into some of these environments. They're working out how they're going to have cellular contact. Are they boosting the Wi-Fi signal? But again, you've got to have all these things sort of working together. And as Dave said before, any small part of that can actually break. And if it does, the whole system breaks down. You know, very similar to me connecting to the internet. If my DNS fails, I can't go anywhere. I can't get that connectivity. If I can't have my ticket, I can't get into the ground. It's not like the old days, Barry. We can't just hop over the turnstile and go onto the terraces there. We need to be able to sort of verify that ticket from an identity perspective, from a security perspective, and then go into the ground.
That happened to me, Mike. So I went to a concert of a ginger-haired English singer-songwriter that plays with a loop pedal. And he has a lot of hits. And we were meeting some friends at this stadium that could hold over 100,000, maybe it's 110,000 people. And we had downloaded our tickets. So we were fine. But when we got to the ground, we started noticing people yelling out like, download your ticket now, download your ticket now, down before you get to the gate, download the ticket. And no one could really download the ticket. And we'd forwarded our ticket to my friend. So there was a great SMS service that you could use. You could allocate that ticket to that particular person. And he was in a panic, not able to get in. And he literally thought it was his phone signal. So he ran like a middle distance runner 2 to 3 kilometers out towards the train station. He didn't run that far. Like 200 to 300 meters is probably more appropriate, to the top of the hill, and didn't help him because still couldn't download the ticket because it wasn't the signal that was causing the issue. The app had an issue. And so they were frantic this particular day trying to figure out a workaround for how people could get in by showing the email of the ticket to get into the ground. So yeah, if it can break, it will break. If it's going to happen anytime, it's going to be when there's 120, 130,000.
You talk about ticketing with potentially hundreds of thousands of people arriving in one place. The venues don't necessarily have full control over, say, the number of 5G masts in the vicinity. So do they have connectivity contingency plans?
So they do. They obviously go through these systems. And yeah, you mentioned the Wi-Fi. We have connectivity access points where they can actually work it is. They can do these studies beforehand. They have an estimate. They know how many people are going to be there. Then they also know the cell coverage in these areas there. In some cases, you'll also find some of these facilities are actually sponsored or have naming rights to these facilities as well. And in those cases, they actually have extra towers, extra signals in place because they know there's a capacity coming in. They'll also do sort of channel or segment switching in the back end. So they'll divert traffic or divert paths over to there. We talk about this quite often, is the smallest part of any chain is the bit that's going to break or that bottleneck. So it doesn't matter. We have this huge bandwidth at the edge there. It's in how do we actually then backhaul that, as you say, how do we get across there? And then ultimately, when you come into that application. Now, when we're talking about here, remember, we're talking about a localized issue. So we need to make sure we have that capacity to spread out into the network. It's not necessarily we don't have to rely on CDNs, for example, here, or not a globally distributed CDN. We need to get the latency down as close as we can to that venue to keep it going there. But you'll also see in some of these facilities, like so for the teams operating, because a lot of these teams will also communicate over phone signals, over Wi-Fis, and they actually create a separate channel for those. I know one particular manager from the Premier League or ex-Premier League manager who actually they had a specific system set up so that he could communicate to the players because they knew when the ground was going to get full that the signal would get blocked. So it's not just having a guest Wi-Fi network and a player one. They actually sort of split it up into various segments where that they can just have this unique connectivity or this VPN connectivity, as it were.
It's not only people watching sports on TV at home these days, or even in the stadium, but people trying to watch sports from anywhere. Dave, what's your thoughts on how broadcasters must cope with a variety of environments?
Yeah, everything now is app-based, right? So I want to be able to watch anything wherever I am. And I've had quite a few interesting stories along my journeys with this. Firstly, like how fortunate are we to sit on a plane and be able to watch sports? I was on a flight once heading to Boston and the Boston Celtics were playing at the time. It was really close to the game and I sat up midway through to see how many other people were watching because I felt like I was cheering too loudly. And I looked up and then realized most of the plane had this game broadcast at the same time. And I just went, what a generation we live in for this whole flight to be connected to a Celtics game and watch it in real time. I mean, I could see so many screens because I was so far at the back of the plane, which is, you know, a real testament to the class of ticket I was on. But the internet was mostly flawless and it was a really great experience. I mean, I have had other examples though where I've been flying and it was awesome to be able to watch the sport on there. I was watching the NHL finals, which is the ice hockey in the US, and missed a goal because we must have been traveling over water or we were somewhere where there wasn't a very good signal and all of a sudden the signal would drop. And that was immensely frustrating. But still, I have a little more tolerance as a user. I can understand this a bit more because it's so new to us to be able to have those experiences. But then I have one other experience where I just don't have any tolerance for it. I'm in a taxi in New York and my football team is playing and they are rarely winning these days. But this particular day, they were coming really close to actually winning a game. And I was trying to open the app and it said, you need to be outside of Australia for this app to work. And I looked out the window and I could see the Empire State Building. And I went, took a photo of the Empire State Building and then me in the yellow taxi and sent a message to their app support and said, this is the message I got. Couldn't be any further than Australia if I tried. Why isn't it working? So I don't know, Mike, like maybe you're the genius on this one because I don't know what they did. But after that support request, they came back and they said, sorry. And all of a sudden the app started working again.
There's a couple of points that go back in there. You said one, we're very spoiled. I'll have the same thing. You know, I'll be watching the soccer on my TV. My dog will want to go for a walk. So then I'll switch it to my phone and I expect that to be seamless. We also then have that issue of broadcast rights, as it were. There's a lot of money involved in these broadcast rights and where we're actually showing it. So you said, we sell it into this country. I want to sell it into another country as well. So then there's identity checks that go on to understand sort of where people are. And that's essentially what I think you're experiencing there. What's interesting to you there is you were connected over 5G at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the difference, right? So if you'd actually come in onto a Wi-Fi point or an internet point, then you'd have actually been seen to be outside the country because it actually picked up from location. Now, obviously, there's VPNs and things like that. There's a sort of work to get around that. And then they also will look at things like time clocks on the device itself or time zone settings. You were traveling over in New York there. So essentially, you were bridging onto a different carrier service. So although your phone was registered with one carrier for what was the time you were in the US, it was officially on someone else. So when it would actually register and did this sync up, it would have still appeared as this is Dave Anderson's phone. He's based in Melbourne. And therefore then it actually saw that's where it considered you to be. So there's all these different checks going in. And it's one to sort of maintain performance as well. So it's one so they can understand specifically where they are so they can cater to it. But then a big part of that is really around these broadcast rights and where they're actually allowed to sort of send this information to.
On planes where you might have 100 or 200 people trying to stream the same content, are the aircraft now fitted with CDNs to serve the big groups of passengers trying to watch the same stream?
They do. They have obviously a server or CDN on board there, so they'll actually sort of stream it into there. But it's interesting, Dave, to talk about your different experiences because the way the antenna is actually fixed onto a plane differs. So if we're talking about a long-haul flight where we have to go over water, then the area will be on the top. But that creates an awful amount of drag and you're connecting to a satellite at that point. So you have the lag and everything around there. Now, the reason then they don't prefer that is one, it's a slower medium, but doesn't really matter essentially with streaming. But you also creates a drag on the plane, which then makes it less fuel efficient. And therefore, they cost them more money to run that. So what you're seeing now, and we have a lot of this in-flight Wi-Fi available to there, and they actually have sort of the antennas underneath the planes. But then when we're doing that, what I'm essentially doing up is I'm picking up 5G towers. I'm picking up a cellular network at the bottom. So I'm closer to it. So my latency is there, but also have better connectivity.
You reminded me of the fact that I flew to Abu Dhabi or wherever at one point, and I forgot to turn my phone off into flight mode. And so I just left my phone. I fell asleep. And I was awoken to many messages, some for you've just connected to Afghanistan, you've just connected to Iran, you've just connected to Iraq. And I was welcomed by my local invoice that arrived from my telco in the $500 to $600 mark after the fact. So it was a pretty expensive sleep.
Sports betting is obviously an area where latency is critical because people are trying to place bets on events as they unfold. Mike, what's your thoughts on how the betting companies must adapt to ensure they minimise that delay?
I might be at the event itself, so I'm actually sort of there, and therefore I need that Wi-Fi connectivity to be good or the cellular connectivity, and to a degree that's outside of the betting company's hands. The thing around these companies is that we'll go to the one with the best odds. So if it's slow and get a better odd from someone else, I'll dip across there. The other thing then is this ability to give the punter the capability to place the bet as close as they can to the event. So you obviously want to avoid that lag type of situation. So we're talking in the concept of sort of milliseconds here as well. This comes into the play when you're thinking about the concept of horse racing. A lot of betting will close when they leave the parade ring. And then there's some when they actually sort of get in the gate. And then before the gate's open, you can place a bet before it jumps there. So this is where the sort of criticality of the timing is really important. And then what it then becomes for you as the punter on the other side is if I'm watching this from a broadcast perspective, conditions can change. So if I have the capability to sort of put a bet on there, if I get the glitch, you know, as Dave talked about missing the Bruins goal going in at the ice hockey, if I miss a part, I can miss some sort of condition. You know, something might happen to the horse and it might actually change what's going on. Or, yeah, there's a glitch in my connectivity and I don't get the odds I want, or I think I'm placing at those odds. So this is why that reliability and that connectivity is sort of critical there.
The horse racing is a good example for us here in Australia, right? Because Melbourne has what's called the Melbourne Cup, and they actually say it's the race that stops the nation. And so it's probably the only event in the Australian sporting calendar where, well, firstly, we have a holiday in Melbourne for the horse race, which is kind of crazy. And the rest of the country pretty much doesn't take the holiday. They just take the day off anyway to watch it. And they do more revenue, apparently, and I don't know if it's the exact same anymore because of the digital systems, but they do say now there's more betting that particular day than any other day for the rest of the year. So like more people place a bet. And so their systems have to scale to significant levels compared to what they would normally do. And in most cases, I've yet to see any issues or errors. But I do remember a little while ago, and you might remember this, Mike, I was working in performance monitoring area. I've got a pretty extensive career, and I did some testing on some of the apps and the websites, and I was just looking for reliability and speed. And it was just for a bit of fun, bit of a campaign idea. And I listed one particular betting agency as having the fastest, most reliable app. And my mum then decided, oh, that's the app that I should then put a bet on. And so she went and did a mystery trifecta on this particular app and happened to get the trifecta. And she won $21,000. And I sent the message to the CTO of that particular app and said, not only do you have the best performing app, but my mum won $21,000 as a result of using your app, and he thought it was one of the funniest emails he'd ever received.
Presumably, this ability to scale very quickly for big events, such as the Melbourne Cup, is only possible now we're in this cloud computing era, as previously that would have required them to make huge investments in infrastructure for what might be only one day a year.
Yeah, it was. But again, you've got to remember everything else has changed as well. So we have shifted to the cloud, but also, I mean, they would have done it on mainframes. So they did do it on mainframes. They were doing it on mainframes for an awful long time. But people went into the shops, or you went to the track and you laid your bet on there. So at the same time, taking the Melbourne Cup, all these kiosks were around there. And there's also races going on at every race course in Australia. So you can do on-course betting there, you know, for the Melbourne Cup. But yeah, to your point, it has become much easier to scale and more cost effective. And it also means they can reach a bigger audience. So then this can go to sort of a wider audience internationally there, where people can start to see this and lay the bets on. On the scalability stuff as well, and I'm glad you mentioned the Melbourne Cup, Dave, because it was actually a really good one, is that they also have a code freeze there, and they won't touch this system. And as you say, you know, I'm looking for some wood to touch around here. But certainly as long as I've been here, I can't remember sort of being a glitch on the system when they went into that that's impacted sort of the Melbourne Cup, the betting side of it. So they've got it right in what they're doing, and the scale's right, and they haven't had any issues where we've overloading. As I said, they've also this ability to make sure that what they're doing in terms of the applications is efficient on the day.
We've talked a lot about the fan experience. What about the players and the athletes themselves?
You'll see the players running around with their vests on. They have all this information coming, so it gets there. The Formula One, you look at the amount of telemetry that's coming off those cars. Again, that needs to be there in record time. I can't have any lag on that because I need to be able to make adjustments to the system, to the car when it comes in, to have the data to make that strategy. Certainly in the US sports, I think it's been there for a while. We've seen it come in definitely into the AFL, and it's been in the English Premier League or the soccer for a while there as well. Even if you think about it, and Dave, you're interested to hear what you say about this from a Peloton perspective, but even for the home person, you know, I'll go for a run now. I actually don't look at my watch these days because the older I get, the better I was. So I'm best off not looking at that time anymore. But when I'm going there, I'll come back and I'll see what my average gait was for my stride length. I want to see those. And then technically I'll put that into a spreadsheet to see what's going on and that. And I actually wish when I was running properly that I'd had access to this type of data. But it's really important to be able to gather it at the time. Again, it's very similar to the event. If this goes, if I miss that data, my watch breaks or I lose a Bluetooth connection, I've lost that for that period of time there.
It's another example of how spoilt we are, isn't it? Like you think through like how much data we get to visualize, like in a lot of the Australian sports, you see heat maps of like where the players are moving and how the ball's moving around. It's all happening in real time. And then to your point about running, Mike, yeah, I run outside, but also run on Peloton. And yeah, you're getting like pace recommendations. They're telling you whether you're on pace, below pace, what's my heart rate, what's my gait. I look at where I went, what my incline was. It's an amazing amount of data, and I think we're super spoiled. The only frustrating thing is that the GPS takes like 3 seconds to connect, which is like not even a long time, and it's even faster these days with some of the new watches. So yeah, we're really spoiled, and we have so much information available to us.
How do the companies who generate this player data minimize latency to make sure this data is getting to both the coaches on the sidelines and the viewers at home when they want it?
The biggest thing, and it's something we're very passionate about, is that the validity of that data. This has got to be sort of data we trust because decisions are being made upon it. So again, we have this connectivity in the ground itself. So I've got to have the Wi-Fi there. I've got to make sure all that ground's covered. And if you're thinking about somewhere like AFL, for everyone who's actually played essentially on a cricket oval. So it's actually played on sort of a huge playing surface there. So, and again, remember, I've got all these people in there. We talked about the GPS disconnecting. I've got to be able to sort of track those systems coming up. I've got to consider the weather and things like that from above in case it's interfering. So I need to make sure that's there. And I've got to have my redundant system at the same time. So if it disconnects that way, can I reconnect a different way? Or can we store the data on the device itself until we regain the connectivity and we can put it down? So that's that element in the ground. Now, once I have that data, it's got to be collated together and pushed out. So one, I've got to get it to the coaches. And it's got to be then put in the personas they want to see. You'll see them all now with their tablets or their devices beside the picture up in the coach's box. And they're sort of looking at this information. They're tapping the screens and making these plays. They've also then have probably access to the stats software so they can pull it in. Even to the point, right? You think about the Euros that just happened. And we saw on Pickford's water bottle, the penalty takers in the order where he'd had it from there. That would have come from that type of stats. If these players are picked, this is the order they're likely to take the penalties in. And this is the way dive left, dive right, stand up straight. This boat's going to Panenka. These types of things were sort of all there. And this is all gathering this information, which has to be put together and sort of sent out.
So there's a huge reliance on both sports broadcasters and the companies collecting their player data to make sure that everything stays upright during a live sports event. But what will these companies have in place in terms of redundancy and backup?
When we talk about contingency, we're talking about this live event. And like it's like a newspaper. This is going to be gone tomorrow. We're going to have a whole new product tomorrow or the next event around there. So you only get one chance at this. It goes out there. So they'll do an awful lot of pre-planning. We talked about this concept of trying to estimate the number of people are going there and what cell coverage we need and what Wi-Fi coverage, and also what is available at that facility itself. So that contingency planning going in place. Now, I will have backup systems in place. I will have redundancy built into this environment. If something happens, I'll have backup generators if the power goes out so that we can carry on broadcasting. All these types of things will be in place there, but you will still get these situations where an outage or happens, or we get a, like we talked about with the UFC issue where we lost the audio or the broadcast system there. What they have to do in those cases is be able to react as quickly as they can. One, to communicate. You know, Dave was talking about the Ticketek thing where we have to communicate that it's not you, it's us. And this is what we need to do to work around it. So it is critical to understand what the problem is and what the problem is not, so that you can actually then take those steps. And that's essentially what they have to be able to do.
I mean, we just expect it to work. And we've been spoiled, as we mentioned earlier, that it will always work no matter what app we're on, no matter what taxi we're in, no matter what city we're in. We just expect to be able to see this in real time. And I just think whether it's a sports event, whether it's a retail event like a Black Friday, whether it's just anything, software has to work. And we as users expect it to work. And those people that are running that software, they have to know why it's broken in order to fix it, because you've got brand loyalty that will be impacted, potential revenue will be impacted. And of course, people just get ridiculously frustrated and every app is another click away. You can just swap to someone else. So failure is not an option. And if it does fail, you need to know why and you need to be very quick to be clear as to what happened and how you'll fix it.
So finally, Mike, are there any lessons that other industries can take from the sporting world?
Absolutely. We mentioned this concept of the Formula One. Yeah, and we obviously know these events are one-off events or they're happening in real time. You need to get that. What I like to think of them are is that these are testing at 1,000 miles an hour. So you're having this event, you've got it, you know, it's really sort of scaling up that type of thing. So you can test all sorts of things and learn from them. You can learn the types of issues that are going to be wrong. You can understand the complexity of all the elements and the components involved in that. An interesting one I think I always think about is when COVID happened and we all worked from home. there wasn't one disaster recovery plan that I'd ever read that said your workforces are going to be incredibly distributed. So you have to do that. So when the enterprise can take from that, we're going to have all our users concentrated or all our customers concentrated in one area for this. What are the considerations we have to take into play? So it's all of these things that sort of need to be considered and could be taken from this environment. And the way I look at it is, like I said, this is just testing at a very high rate.
Yeah, from my perspective, I think making sure site reliability from a brand perspective is like just so important. Like it's the baseline of what everyone comes to expect. I do think that these apps and brands will be able to differentiate their experiences once they provide that reliability and then they start layering on actually what do people want within that app? How do they navigate to these different areas? How do we become the sports app of a Netflix type experience where I'm getting a better experience every single time I log into that app and it's a really loved experience for me? So I think reliability is the baseline. And then from there, you've got to start layering in actually how do we differentiate our experience delivery?
I think another thing as well is how do you consume this? How can people consume my service or my system? That can come from it. Yeah, we talk about this being a real-time event, is that I've reached this point now where I don't watch game on replay because I know I'll just fast forward through it. So I need to see it on there. So this has created this whole experience for me. And I think that's something else that could be learned from it.
Yeah, I think on that one, you take an example of like when Netflix first came out with the ability to switch from an app to then I go from my app downstairs and then I go to the bedroom and I want to watch exactly the same show at exactly the same moment. And every one of those brands then had to deliver exactly the same experience in order to keep up. So there really is this race of like how to differentiate your experiences and everyone will benchmark their experience on the last best experience that they had. So you're going to have to use data. You're going to have to look at the competition and you just got to stay ahead to make sure that people continually get these great experiences all the time and it just becomes a normal behavior.
That's it for our sports special. Huge thanks to Dave Anderson for joining us this week. Please take a moment to like and subscribe. We really appreciate it. And not only does this ensure you're in the know when a new episode's published, it also helps us to shape the show for you. You can follow us on X at @1000eyes or send questions and feedback to internetreport@1000eyes.com. Until next time, goodbye.